Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 335.
This week on the podcast, we'll share some important self-care tips for the next Democratic debates.
Plus, next week's TV schedule is C-SPAN, 25 hours a day, 8 days a week, because the impeachment trial starts on Tuesday at some ungodly hour.
And if you're too young to remember the 90s, Ken Starr is doing a comeback tour, and he's playing all his greatest sex-obsessed hits.
Plus, Lev Parnas confirms everything we knew via common sense from the last 6 months.
And Joe Kennedy III is a conspiracy theory waiting to happen in the race for the Massachusetts Senate.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
Yeah.
And soon, you will be able to find me on one of my favorite podcasts, besides this one. I'm going to be a guest on The Guilty Feminist, which you
live.
Have live,
not just on the
a
podcast.
Live show.
Like a place where you have to buy a ticket.
That's right.
I have to buy a ticket to
in
go
a theater.
See Lila.
That's right.
Yeah.
If you have never listened to The Guilty Feminist, you're missing out. It's a great comedy podcast that's about feminism and has great guests on. And
yeah.
I highly recommend you listen to it, but also look out for me. And if you're in the LA area,
go
you can come
tickets.
And see me.
Yeah, Jenny Slate's going to be there.
That's right. Chanel Miller, who wrote Know My Name, is going to be there.
It's great.
Yeah, the tickets are on Ticketmaster or at guiltyfeminist.com. And you can come on Wednesday
Lila
to the
Nordstrom,
Wilshire Ebell Theater.
Ticketmaster.
Who knew? Who knew?
Love it.
In other news, we might have a project coming forward that we haven't decided if we're going to commit to yet, but I have decided to announce it on the podcast to see if I can pressure us into doing it because it's my new favorite idea.
I know.
I want to do presidential hate rankings.
I know. We were talking to, you know, Grant Sloss,
yeah,
who's
friend
on
of the podcast
many times, and we were sort of debating who our top, I mean, everybody knows who our sort of like general top choices are, but then we were kind of like,
we were struggling to figure out who our third choice
who our third choice, and I think that I said something like, I can rank all the ones that I hate very easily, but after the top two, it's sort of like, then there's the top two that I like, and then the rest of it is just sort of like, who do I hate the least?
That's right.
So we're thinking of...
We literally were we tried to think of who our top three would be,
right.
And we got ideas as varied as Andrew Yang and Tom Steyer.
Right. My previous third choice was Marianne Williams.
Right. I mean, so things are...
Because why not?
Rough you know? For us out there.
I mean, like, hopefully, you know, we're not entering a world where we're going to have to pick our
right.
third choice. So I felt comfortable saying that mine was Marianne Williams because it was part joke, but also part of like,
get
you
it.
Know, like maybe she's the next least worst. I don't know.
I was the one who picked Andrew Yang. I mean, what
I
the
know.
Hell is going on there? I mean,
I know.
Who knows what's
and
going
I,
on?
And then I said, I was just sort of like, is mine Tom Steyer? Which is weird because like, I don't even think billionaires should exist.
So crazy.
Like,
it's crazy.
In my, you know, in my fever dream, like he's not here at all.
Right.
But like, I don't know.
I
it's
did
weird.
Note to myself as soon as we got off of that text conversation. Not, I guess you're never off a text conversation.
Sure.
As soon as we stopped actively participating in it, that if I had to actually rank my most hated candidates, I had like a three-way tie for first.
Yeah.
So that was rough.
Mm-hmm.
And it was only because...
And it was probably the other people who were on the debate stage.
No, oddly...
No. Oh, John Delaney was on there.
Yeah, no, he's
no,
not,
we've
he's not at the top of my hate rankings.
He doesn't get to be ranked.
You know, he's... It's like, you know... Does Patrick Duvall?
No. Duvall Patrick?
I mean, Duvall.
Yeah, we don't know his name. That guy.
Why do I always do that with him? Does Duvall Patrick need to be on my hate rankings? He's middling on my hate rankings
yeah.
at best because I don't remember he's in the race and I get his name in the wrong order literally
yeah.
every time. No, I realized that obviously Buttigieg and Biden were at the top of my hate
of
rankings.
Right.
And then I thought to myself, is Michael Bloomberg up there with them?
Yeah.
Even though he's not relevant to the race in the same way, I just thought, if I, in my perfect world, Michael Bloomberg... as a person, as a human, is my most hated presidential candidate.
Sure.
So he would have to be first, too. And then I just
yeah.
thought, is anyone second, or are they all just up there?
Right, they're just... they're all tied.
You will not
like
believe...
Like, all 11 of the others are just
how
tied.
Many times this week I have called Duvall Patrick Duvall.
Well, Patrick is a...
It's a,
is
first,
a
name.
First name.
Right.
Yeah.
Duvall is a last name.
Might not be. Yeah,
yeah.
I don't know.
That's... In any case, one, we promised you in the rundown... some self-care tips for
right.
the presidential debate nights. And that's because
and
we had a chance to try one.
Right. And it's really just one tip, actually.
It's
we,
one tip.
We promised multiple tips and we actually
you
we
only
don't
need
have
one.
Any. Maybe we'll think of one while we're talking
you only
about
need
it.
One.
Right. Don't watch it.
Don't watch it. This is the first debate I have not watched. And
I
you guys,
watched.
I feel great.
I watched about 45 minutes of it. And I, if you, if a moderator came into this room right now and said, I want you to play all six of the people who are on the debate stage.
Could do it.
I could do it.
Easily.
I could get through 3 hours, mm-hmm. and I could say everything that each of those individual people are going to say at any moment in response to any question, and what the person, what someone's rebuttal is going to be, and what the rebuttal to that rebuttal is going to be, and I could do it at this
point.
Even,
like, I could do all the unplanned interruptions.
I watched about 45 minutes of this debate and realized that I was finishing everyone's sentences, and then I had to leave to go to a thing, because contrary to what you might think, I have a life sometimes, anyway. And I was like, well, I'm going to finish watching this when I get home. And then I got home, and I was like, you know what? No, I'm not doing it.
You know what I did?
I'm going to not watch this at all.
I went to see the movie Bombshell. I didn't even have an excuse. Right. I just thought to myself, I'd rather see a movie tonight.
No.
Watched a movie about a presidential debate. Felt fine. Felt great.
Yeah.
Got home. Didn't miss it.
Yeah.
And it was especially useful to me. Because then, the next day, when all of that drama between Liz and Bernie broke out because of that tense exchange they had after the debate, people kept asking me what I thought, and I kept saying, I don't care. And what's so interesting is that I still don't care. I've now watched the exchange. I have now watched the highlights of the debate, or read the highlights of the debate, more accurately.
Well, I think that we could talk about
it. It turns out I don't care.
We could probably talk about that very thing until the end of time. But I think that, I think it seems like they're both trying to move past it, at least to a degree, anyway. I think supporters of both of them will ultimately do so. Obviously, there's a lot of people, I think specifically in the Bernie camp, that are upset because they feel like she did him dirty. And I was certainly... I was rage texting you the next morning.
That's right.
I'm not here to admit otherwise. But yeah, I mean, I was mad. But I also sort of like... have come around to the idea that it's sort of like, well, we need each other at least for a minute, because this is like a progressive movement and this fight, and and that's what sort of like, still, if I think long and hard enough about it, like that's what still makes me mad.
Sure.
You know, there's also like very recent reports that, because I think a lot of what the Bernie people were upset about was that it seemed like it was obviously leaked by her.
Right.
Because it was a private meeting between the two of them. So, like, obviously it got out to the press at some point. But there's a lot of new reports that she had an off-the-record meeting with some journalists after that meeting.
Yeah.
And it seems like CNN, who broke this story, could have basically gotten their this story from some journalists who were either there that worked for CNN that broke their... you know,
off the record
ness,
or
what. So, you know, and also, as you and I discussed, like, it could be that he said whatever it is that he claims that he said, which was that a woman is going to have trouble in the race because of X, Y, and Z. And she heard, you know, a woman can't win because she's a woman, and she's been hearing a woman can't win since she was born.
Right. Well, that's what I said. The next day, what I said to Brent was, look, obviously, we have an incentive to be mad at her because we're Bernie supporters.
Right.
So, like, whatever. Am I happy that this came out? Not particularly. But if you are told every single day for years of your life that someone like you, not even you, but just someone like you, anyone who could relate to your life experience can't be the president, and I know she's told that every day because I'm told that every day, and I'm not running for president.
Right.
And I'm often told it by men that look like Bernie Sanders.
Sure.
So if you were told that every day for the rest of your life, you might find yourself interpreting a comment about how it's difficult for women to run for president to mean that they can't be. Or he might have said that because that was considered common knowledge by almost everyone for years, including up until, I mean, arguably still. But for years of our life, it has been acceptable for people to say that as if that's an understood concern.
Yeah.
As if that's not like an outrageous comment to make. We are supposed to, the number of people who have said to me, well, of course a woman can't win, as if that's a thing to be taken for granted, like we all know, is outrageous. And so is it, you know, it's not, look, it's not ideal for our strategy of uniting the progressive left.
Right.
It is, if you are a campaign that feels that you are flailing and need something splashy to get your name back into the headlines, a thing you might do.
Yeah.
And I also think it worked. Because Liz Warren is in the headlines, and Russia is now paying for Never Warren hashtags, which is the best thing that could have possibly ever happened to her. Because at the end of the day, and I think the important takeaway from this is, unless you are truly not a progressive, then there is no way that you refuse to vote for Liz Warren if you can't vote for Bernie Sanders over someone else.
And that's what I don't want us to get away from. Yeah. Like, it's, you know, I mean, I wish that the spat hadn't come up, but, like, it did, and I think that that's okay. Like, at some point, something like this was bound to happen, I think, to a degree. Because,
well,
like, they're
the
both
runner.
Running
he's
for the
at
same,
the moment, you
right,
know?
You know? So, like, look, something like this was going to happen, but what we can't do is get to a point where if you're a supporter of one or the other and you're faced with, like, okay, one of them isn't in the race, or even if we get all the way to a convention and it's a brokered convention or whatever.
We have to be willing to back each other.
We can't have turned on each other so deeply that, like, you can't ultimately realize as a Bernie supporter that, like, Liz is clearly your next best bet.
Yeah.
And vice versa.
Yeah. No, I think it's easy to read into campaign rhetoric that gets very dramatic and heated about these things, like everyone is being unreasonable, but part of it is just because we're still in the debate. So,
right.
Like, everyone's being unreasonable.
They're all still trying to win.
Exactly. Once they're not all trying to win, whatever Bernie or Warren supporters that aren't willing to support the other and would rather vote for fucking Buttigieg or somebody are not really progressives.
I know.
So sorry about it.
Yeah.
They were not actually a part of our movement. They were just sort of enjoying the ride on a fun... We're more fun, so I get it, you know?
I know.
We're a more fun coalition of people.
We are.
We'll continue to be more fun, regardless of whether Liz or Bernie are the winner.
Right.
We obviously have our preference, but having your preference doesn't mean that you can't use common sense.
Right, exactly.
In any case, Andrew Yang's going to be back on the stage in February, so we're going to, because this was the first...
It was the first all-white debate.
Right, Oscar so white debate. Also, it's Oscar so white Oscars, so a lot of... A lot of white people are around right now.
No,
But Andrew Yang did say that he met the threshold for the February debate, so he will be back. He is doing well in fundraising.
Great.
He is still tweeting about nothing.
Right.
During all of this, he just tweeted about cake.
Oh, that's right. It was his birthday.
Yeah, exactly.
Dave Chappelle endorsed him.
Yeah, well, you know, why not
have
Dave Chappelle endorse you? I don't know what that means.
I don't either.
There's some curious endorsees. Elon Musk endorsed him.
Oh, sure.
Tommy Chong endorsed him. So it's an eclectic group of people.
Sure.
But, you know, we're there. On the more exciting campaign front and the less fake scandal front.
Right.
There is, like, an actual policy debate brewing between Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders, where Biden, in an effort to step away from his very unsavory positions on Social Security in the past, has accused the Sanders campaign of doctoring a video of him so that it would look like he was giving a speech endorsing Paul Ryan's cuts to Social Security and Medicare in 2016.
Right. But you want to know what actually made him look like he was giving that speech?
Doing it.
Giving the speech.
Giving the speech. That's right.
Unedited. Unadulterated.
That's right.
Undoctored.
Undoctored.
Anything.
In 2018,
just a straight lift of him talking about it.
He gave a speech at the Brookings Institute where he praises Paul Ryan's cuts to Social Security and Medicare. Those were still at the tail end of being trendy at the time. this is on the heels of 1 trillion videos of him surfacing doing exactly this, praising cuts to Social Security. So when he says to you, a thinking person, that he is not in favor of cutting Social Security...
Yeah.
This is not the only video proof that you have, because I watched a video of him from the floor of the Senate in like 2014 or something like that, insisting that not only had he tried to do this once, not only had he tried to do it twice, he tried to do it 4 times, and he was proudly declaring that on the floor of the Senate.
This was when he talks about being able to work across the aisle. It's this.
Yeah.
He has put spending on the table every time he's basically, like, had to go to work with the Republicans on any sort of spending bill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is a man who does not think that we should continue to fund Social Security in a public manner.
Right.
Is
now
what
his,
we're dealing with
now
here.
Now, his campaign stance is that he's going to lift the cap.
That's right. But you know why that's his campaign stance?
Because it has to be.
It's the only one that you can win with. It's the only one. But if you were to check his record on the matter, and I realize for some candidates... Buttigieg, you can't check their record on the matter.
Sure.
But for other candidates, Joe Biden, you can check a record that goes back to like the 70s.
Sure.
And what you will find if you check his record is unwaveringly support. He's unwaveringly supportive of the idea of cutting Social Security benefits.
Unwaveringly wavering on Social
That's
Security
right.
spending.
In as many different contexts as possible, he is ready to argue with you that cutting Social Security is a great idea.
Yeah.
He's proud of it.
Oh, and this is like... All of the writing that I have, first off, and when we were saying that it wasn't edited, PolitiFact said that it wasn't edited. It wasn't the Sanders campaign or just like us watching it and being like, nope, looks good.
Right.
Like, that's, you know. But yeah, there have been a lot of, since this came out, because like he's been attacking Biden on Social Security for a minute. Like this is sort of like this is how he sees himself, I think, sort of like stealing back some of those Biden voters.
Well, and the Biden voters?
And we've talked about this.
Old people.
Right. They're old people. And this, you know, we talked about this. Like, he doesn't do great with them, but like, he should.
No Malarkey Tour is a tour geared to old people who are on Social Security.
Right. Exactly.
A program that he is desperate to cut.
Yeah. And the Joe Biden got asked about this at a couple town halls in Iowa this week. So it's working. People are paying attention to this line of attack. And there's been a lot of, like, think pieces recently on the blogs about, like, well, not even just the blogs, but I mean, like, HuffPo and things. Like, just, like, that this is an attack that Biden can't really argue with.
He can't defend himself.
He can't defend himself. And so this is going to work and is already starting to work.
The proof is in the 1 million video clips of Biden arguing vehemently that we should cut Social Security.
Yeah. But
Biden is trying to play it as if Sanders is playing fast and loose with the facts and is decided to – he's doing a classic Donald Trump. Donald Trump is doing this with the impeachment where he's saying it wasn't a fair trial because he didn't get to testify even though he was offered the chance and didn't do it.
Yeah.
Biden is trying to claim that Sanders owes him an apology for calling him a liar.
Well, and I think Biden probably felt like this was probably a good week to call Sanders a liar also.
It's the only week to do it.
Right. I mean, even though he's wrong – he probably felt like, well, I might be able to get away with this week.
That's right.
Because, you know, there's sort of the hatred level
the
in
thing.
His direction is high.
It was not a good week to do that because no week is a good week to call Sanders a liar when you are the one with the compromised Social Security position.
Right.
So that is unfortunate. If the election was tomorrow, it would have been a good week to do it.
Right.
But because the election is a month away, well, 2 weeks away, whatever. It's not a great time to get everyone to Google what the answer is.
I know, right? Exactly. Yeah.
Meanwhile, in other Iowa news, a curious thing happened with the Quad City Times, a newspaper that Brent said, oh, sure, the Quad City Times. And I was like, that doesn't sound like a real place. But this is a paper. Well, actually, one of the interesting things we learned in Iowa when we were talking to the DNC office there is that Iowa has, like, basically more local media than any state on earth. So every local media, every media market, every town has its own media market.
Right, because it's so rural in the sense that it's, like, just so spread out that, like, you really sort of, like, end up getting your own news from, like, just your local area.
Right.
Yeah. Whether it be radio, a lot of, like, local small AM radio stations.
Right.
Yeah.
And that makes it difficult to run for president because to get media coverage in Iowa, you can't just go to Des Moines and be like, everyone will find out about this. You have to go talk to the Quad City
Times. And despite your level of knowledge on the Quad Cities, which is fair, like, I'm not saying it should be higher, but it's also sort of like, it's not nothing.
It's one of the places in Iowa.
Right. Some of it is also in Illinois, though, so that makes...
Oh, that sounds right.
That makes their endorsement of somebody for a caucus less important. Yeah.
Well, it seems less important on the caucus side, but more important on the relevance as a place side. Because then two states are involved. That seems like a whole thing at that point.
Yeah.
In any case, the Quad City Times in the 2016 race endorsed Bernie Sanders.
Yeah.
But this year, they endorsed Amy Klobuchar.
Sure.
Which was shocking because who has endorsed Amy Klobuchar? But also because they said they were endorsing her because she was a, quote, progressive realist.
Not a thing.
So here's a thing that we wanted to mention to everyone, just FYI as a side note.
Yeah.
We all think we're realists.
Right.
All of us think our plans are realistic. Brent and I are talking about socializing half of the public services, half of the private services provided by the, you know, in this society, and we still think our plans are realistic.
Right.
I think Medicare for All is realistic as fuck.
Yeah.
I think it's way more realistic than the plan that we are currently using. Well, I also think that providing people an opportunity to go to college without accruing debt is not only realistic, but a great idea that would benefit everyone immeasurably.
Right.
There are so many things that I think are realistic proposals that I also believe are progressive. Amy Klobuchar is not a progressive realist.
Right.
She is a moderate.
Yeah.
She's not progressive. She might consider herself a realist, but that's a redundant term because we all think we're realists.
It's
we
like
all
you said,
think we're seeing reality the way we are.
A progressive realist is like a conservative Democrat.
Yeah. That's what you have there as a Republican. Conservative Democrats are fun ways of saying Republican.
Yeah.
Republican, but also muddying your primary.
Sure.
Progressive realist sounds a little bit like Clinton's progressive who gets things done.
Right.
But as Brent pointed out, even that makes more sense.
Even that's a thing. Because I mean, she was neither a progressive or a
getting-or-donner. Right.
But, like, you could be a progressive who is getting things done.
Yeah, I would.
You couldn't. You can't.
Bernie Sanders is a progressive who gets things done.
Right. A progressive realist is not a thing.
No.
In the sense that, I mean, like you said, we're progressive realists.
Everyone is a realist to themselves.
Yeah.
So a progressive realist is not a moniker that means anything when it applies to Amy Klobuchar, who's not a progressive.
Yeah.
It is, she's a moderate. No realist needed because we all think we're realists. So there's no reason to call anyone a realist.
Yeah.
In any case, that was a side note. And then as a further side note, before we get into the impeachment stuff, I also wanted to note that yesterday Trump tweeted, they are taking the Democratic nomination away from crazy Bernie, just like last time. Some things never change. And I just wonder what's going on right now with him and Bernie.
I know.
He seems to have a soft spot for Bernie Sanders.
He does, because I feel like at a rally recently, he said something about, like, Bernie Sanders is the front runner. You really got to give it to him. That guy just keep, like...
I still maintain that it is because Bernie Sanders outranks him in New York rank. He's from Brooklyn. Trump is from, like, a trash box part of Queens. This is not... It is one thing to be from a part of Queens that is, like, an interesting part of Queens. But Trump is just from, like, racist Queens. Like, he's basically from Long Island. This is not how... You can't outrank Bernie Sanders being from trash box Queens.
Yeah, no, you can't.
That's not a thing. Bernie Sanders is as sort of inherently New York as a person in Vermont could possibly be. Whereas Donald Trump is, like, all of our worst qualities magnified. Of course he's afraid of Bernie Sanders. If Chuck Schumer knew how to play anything strategically, he would be afraid of him too.
Yeah.
The problem is Chuck Schumer doesn't know how to negotiate.
No, he doesn't.
In any case. Also, Trump spent a lot of this week tweeting in Persian.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what's going on.
Sure.
So whatever. Impeachment. It's happening.
It's happening.
It started. Tuesday began with a very exciting Trump tweet also that I think then got removed about how they were trying to impeach him. For having a perfect phone call. A note
that he and his perfect phone call.
The perfect phone call is hilarious. Also, they have already impeached him. Months have passed,
yeah.
I feel like,
yeah.
since that. At least 1 month has passed right. since he was impeached. So they are not trying to impeach him currently. They have done it. They are trying to try him for high crimes and misdemeanors
yes.
right now. But they have already impeached him. That's done.
Yeah.
In any case, Pelosi appointed House managers for the impeachment trial. And they went and read the charges this week. Yeah. And, John Roberts came in and...
They didn't take our advice. They didn't listen to last week's podcast.
They are so disappointing when it comes to taking our advice. So here are the House managers.
If you're going to pick seven, like, at least throw a ringer on there.
Put Maxine Waters on there. They will be good for ratings. Trump loves ratings. We love ratings. Everyone with a
We're
brain
gonna need them.
Loves ratings. We need the ratings. It's hard to get people to watch C-SPAN, you guys.
Yeah.
C-SPAN is very boring. I don't know if you have watched a trial like this unfold before, but as a child of the hearings movement, I can confirm for you that almost everything that happens on C-SPAN is super dull. The only time it's exciting is when someone gives a splashy speech that makes no sense.
Yeah.
Even if you are just putting someone on there for the theater of it all so that Republicans will be mad, put that person
Fine.
On there.
Do it. Yeah.
Like.
They didn't.
People don't know. In any case, so Schiff and Nadler are on it, obviously.
Obviously.
But then the other people that are on it are Hakeem Jeffries, who is he's like a young DNC hack. He's the chair of the House Democratic Caucus. He was appointed that in 2018 when they did their leadership shakeup to make it sound, when they decided that, who was it, Karen Bass was not going to have any position on something,
Sure.
They overlooked someone interesting in order.
Yeah.
Maybe it wasn't Karen Bass. It was somebody though. Was very late to the impeachment game. He did not support Pelosi's initial decision to start the impeachment investigation. Moderate guy, tries to seem cool so that people won't realize how moderate he is. He's kind of like, he tries to pull a bit of a like Cory Booker vibe where he tries to seem like, I'm a cool young guy on the scene, but he's actually just like your average Democrat.
Yeah.
Zoe Lofgren, who's a California Democrat, she's probably the most qualified person on this committee.
Yeah, because she's on both.
She was on the Judiciary Committee during the Nixon inquiry, impeachment inquiry, and then also a member of the panel during the Clinton impeachment. So she's
been around a minute.
Done a lot of impeachment-related activities.
Yeah.
Val Demings, who is on both intelligence and judiciary.
Yeah, yeah.
She also her background is in law enforcement because she was the police chief of Orlando before that. So she's one of the ones that's not a lawyer, but she's got a background in law enforcement.
Yeah.
Jason Crow, who is one of the total wild card additions.
Right.
He's one of the sort of national security freshmen. There's like that Democratic caucus in that are all freshmen who are very national security obsessed, who wrote that op-ed in September that was like the moment that we were like, oh, fuck, we're going to have to do impeachment.
We're going to do impeachment, right, yeah.
Like Abigail Spanberger is on that, in that crew. There's like a bunch of them. He doesn't sit on any of the committees charged with investigating Trump, though. He's a former Army captain. He served in Iraq and Afghanistan. And he's on the House Armed Services Committee, but no one's really sure what he's doing on this.
Right.
And then also there were splashier choices in that national security freshman group. So I don't know what's
going on. Yeah, and I fear having, like, you know, obviously we want somebody who is, as we mentioned, somebody who is splashy and things like that. But you also want people who are, and I'm not saying he doesn't know what's going on. I'm sure he knows good and well what's going on. But it's a little odd that he's not on either of those committees, because I feel like, you know, we're going to get to some of the things that, like, just happened this week. I mean, new evidence, and look, the Senate might not hear the new evidence anyway, but the House still gets to present it.
Yeah.
So, you know, new evidence is coming in faster than these people can even keep up with it. And so I feel like someone who is maybe not as, like, in the trenches on this, and again, I'm not saying he's not, but it's weird that he sort of is like, you know, I feel pretty good about Val Demings
is,
just because she's literally on both of the committees that have sort of, like, heard impeachment in the House. Right. So, like, probably nobody knows more about it than her. So, like, fine, great, Val Demings.
And even Hakeem Jeffries is still on the Judiciary Committee, you know.
Right, so it's a little weird that, I don't know, I just sort of don't get it. I mean, maybe he'll be great. I don't know enough about him, I guess. But
no, that's,
like,
nobody knows anything about
him. Well, right.
Him.
It seems like this could be a spot where one of those, it could have just gone to, like, any old person who could have just, made a scene. Scene stealer.
I feel like, if you're going to have people who aren't on either of the committees.
And I fear a national security freshman congressperson is not going to be the scene stealer that we're looking for.
Former army captain. Something about him tells me that he's not. Yeah. And then the last is Sylvia Garcia.
Yeah.
Sylvia Garcia, who is a Judiciary Committee member, but also a bit of a wild card addition. She doesn't have any specific sort
she's
of involvement
judge,
in this,
though,
but she's a former judge.
Yeah.
So, and she's from Texas. So I think part of that is to add some geographical. You know, the two committee chairs that are doing this are literally represent, like, the middle of L.A. and the middle of New York City. Hakeem Jeffries is, I think his district is in Brooklyn, mostly maybe part of Queens. Zoe Lofgren's California. Val Demings is Florida. But then Jason Crow and Sylvia Garcia are, like, Colorado and Texas. So, Sylvia Garcia represents the area around Houston. So that makes sense.
Yeah.
But there's even splashier people for the area around Houston. What about Al Green? I mean, he's fun.
Yeah, sure.
Anyway,
yeah.
Side note. the Republicans are going to offer an organizing resolution that postpones the idea of the question of whether to call witnesses until after the House has presented its case and the president's legal team responds. That's their sneaky attempt to not have to call witnesses.
Right.
But they weren't allowed to just blanket say they weren't going to, because there are a couple of Republicans who are, like, trying to make it sound like they're playing ball.
There's three of them.
Right. And they're the people.
Currently.
They're the ones that you could, if you had to guess right now who they are, you've already guessed them. It's like Collins and Romney.
And Mitt Romney,
And who's the third? Is it Murkowski?
Oh, I think it is.
Yeah, of course it's Murkowski. Yeah. No, it's Murkowski.
Yeah, it is.
That's just consulted our notes. Everything's.
Yeah.
That's
you. But they'll fold at the drop of a hat.
Obviously.
Though.
They're not afraid to fold.
What
that's
they do.
Their move.
Who they are.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, you know, they'll get a question, a period where the senators can ask questions of both sides, then they'll hold the vote on whether to call more witnesses. If they don't call more witnesses, this could be over by the time that Trump gives the State of the Union, which is fascinantly on February 4th, the day after the Iowa caucuses.
Yeah.
I mean, what a world. What a world.
I'm sure he'll weigh in on that.
Oh, God. I can only imagine what kind of excitement we're in for at the State of the Union.
Yeah.
If anyone has tickets to the State of the Union and is looking for two people that don't offer anything in terms of in terms of optics, I don't care that I am not necessarily, shall we say, a supporter of Donald Trump. I will attend the State of the Union. If you can get me tickets to the State of the Union, I'll fly from Iowa to the State of the Union as opposed to L.A. Let me know.
It's interesting. The one way that we might actually get witnesses here is because there are some Republicans who want to call Hunter Biden and
Joe
Biden.
Yeah, that's right.
So, like, and I saw Schiff on TV the other day being like, I would be open to that.
Yeah.
And like, I think it's just because, like, at that point, like, then there's witnesses involved.
Exactly.
I think you sort of, like, suffer through having, and that would be such a sideshow anyway, that it's like,
people would start paying attention.
It'd
be good for ratings.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't really know that the Republicans,
I also, like,
I think that they think that that's a better idea than it actually is.
I am not about to sacrifice democracy to save Hunter Biden.
No.
You know, like, if Hunter Biden is taken down by this.
Or Joe.
I'm not about to let Donald Trump keep being the president to save Joe Biden.
I know.
Joe Biden has had a long, storied career of sometimes being on the wrong side of history and sometimes being on the right side. He's in his early hundreds.
He was a vice president for 8 years.
Great vice president in that he just hung out and smiled a lot. I don't think that we need to sacrifice our entire government to save him.
I agree.
So I know it's not necessarily ideal to let them have a sideshow, but it's also like maybe good for
ratings. But it's also you want witnesses called.
You want witnesses called. And we have witnesses who want to be called.
Right. John Bolton now wants
Bolton
to be called.
John Bolton is desperate to be called.
Yeah.
John Bolton obviously has a book coming out. Obviously is looking to sell some copies of his book.
Right.
Let's let him. But right. Also...
Lev Parnas seems like he's willing to talk
Lev
to anybody.
Parnas
once you're talking to Rachel Maddow, you'll be questioned
let
by the Senate.
Let me say something about literally every single associate of Donald Trump and Rudy Giuliani since the beginning of time. They will all talk.
Yeah.
There is no loyalty in that world.
No.
You can get any of them. We could call... Michael Cohen will talk. All of them will talk.
Oh, yeah. They're all down
talked.
For a Senate interview.
Yeah. They're not... All they want is you to protect them from him. They don't care about... They don't care... two shits about this guy's an asshole.
Right.
You know? I mean, Jesus.
Yeah.
They don't have fond personal feelings for him.
Yeah.
In any case, also there's new evidence.
Yeah.
So the benefit of having witnesses, the benefit of having new witnesses would be that they could talk. You know, one is that obviously Bolton is willing to testify. One is that Parnas is giving as much information as possible over. But also one is that the GAO, their analysis has said that the White House violated federal law by withholding the Ukraine funds. And so the fact that the GAO has weighed in on that is new and was not part of the the House Judiciary hearing. So it would be interesting to maybe hear some people talk about that in the trial since...
Sure would.
Since what we're doing. And speaking of Lev Parnas.
Oh, man.
He is coming fast and furious with... He's like Gordon
really
Sondland.
I
he
know.
Just wants to have some glory.
He quoted him too, which I thought was... Rich. We'll get to that in a second.
Of course.
Right.
Of
so he's been paying attention.
These people love the hymns among them. You guys, they love it.
Yeah.
Lev Parnas is one of the people that was indicted in relation to his Giuliani dealings.
Yes. And he also, the House published a bunch of evidence that was provided by him the day before he went on Rachel Maddow and gave this sort of like two-night interview that was sort of like just bombshell after bombshell.
Yeah.
So we're gonna sort of like walk you through some of those takeaways from that. Starting with he claims that Trump tried to withhold more than just military aid to Ukraine, which is new news as far as anyone
right.
can
we
tell.
Thought that Trump had definitely withheld the military aid from Ukraine in an effort to get him to investigate Burisma and Hunter Biden.
Yeah,
but
he claims it was all aid.
Yeah,
he said it did not publicly that Trump threatened to withhold all aid from Ukraine if it didn't publicly announce an investigation into the Bidens, and that he delivered that quote very harsh message to Ukrainian officials on behalf of Giuliani and Trump.
Yeah.
Parnas.
The message was it wasn't just military aid, it was all aid. Basically, the relationship would be sour. We would stop giving them any kind of aid.
Yeah.
So that is one exciting bombshell.
And he also said that this aid was specifically all contingent on the U.S. or on Trump's demand that they investigate the Bidens, which sort of like goes against Trump's story that there wasn't quid pro quo.
Right.
Like, he's claiming that it was, like, 100% specifically quid pro quo.
That was the entire purpose of that move.
Of withholding
was
the money
quid pro quo.
Was for them to start an investigation into the Bidens.
Which is one thing. It's like with anything, we knew in our hearts that was the case. Because why would Donald Trump do it any other way? It just makes sense.
The other thing that we all knew in our hearts was that everyone knew what was going on here.
Everyone.
Not just Trump. Because we've been talking about this for a long time. Everyone has. Like, oh, well, it seems like Attorney General Barr is just a shill for the president. It seems like Mike Pence is just a shill for the president, and there's no way that he didn't know what was going on in all these Ukraine deals and various things, and he didn't go to Ukraine for the inauguration of the new president and everything. So like we basically like got confirmation that all of those things that we had been assuming were true were in fact true, because Parnas claims that Giuliani had contacted Barr about the attempts to get Ukraine to announce a Biden investigation, and that Barr had to have known everything. He said specifically Attorney General Barr was basically on the team, was his quote from that. So now we have the Attorney General of the United States. It would be one thing if Mike Pence was a show for him because he's the vice president and he sort of like gets to be.
Yeah.
I mean, to a certain degree. I mean, he shouldn't be doing things that are illegal. But the Attorney General does not work for the president.
Right. The Attorney General works for us.
That's right.
So.
Yeah. Anyway, next, he also claims that again, another duh moment, right. but like nice to sort of like have confirmation for that Trump knew exactly what was going on here. He has tried to sort of like distance himself from like knowing like what some of these associates were sort of like up to with these, you know, starting investigations and various other things.
What else does he do?
Of course, I know. Like, this is his life.
Right. He's not there presidenting. He's not there understanding important policy decisions. Right. This is what he's up to.
Right. But Maddow asked Parnas what the, quote, main inaccuracy or the main lie being told is that he felt that he could correct. And he responded that the president didn't know what was going on. President Trump knew exactly what was going on, and he continued to say that he would not, that he himself, Parnas, would not act without, quote, the consent of Rudy Giuliani or the president. And then he also added that Trump's claims that he doesn't know Parnas himself is a lie.
They've been trying this for a while.
And that's been another hilarious thing that's been happening this week, because you've seen all of these people discussing and trying to claim that they didn't know Lev Parnas, and then like seconds later, you know, anybody who can use Google image search, you find, you know, 1,000 pictures of, like, them all, like, hanging out together over years of time.
I was going to say, not just pictures that are, like, obviously from fundraisers where you just pose quickly. Pictures,
like a dinner.
Right. Pictures where they, like, are hanging out.
Right. Exactly. They're having lunch at, like, some diner in New York City together. Right. Like, I mean.
Yeah. They're not. Yeah. That's not the same thing as going to a photo op at a fundraiser.
Yeah, exactly.
He also said that Pence skipped the Zelensky inauguration because of the Ukraine pressure campaign. So.
Right.
Basically, adding, you know, admitting what we also know, which is that Mike Pence knew what was going on as well, and that he refused to attend that inauguration because Ukraine was refusing to investigate the Bidens.
Yep.
So that's more quid pro quo fun.
Yeah. Oh, but that's when he quoted Gordon Sondland saying everybody was in the loop.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah. And he also, and this is another sort of like, well, obviously.
Right.
You know, but one of the other things that that Trump has been trying to do was the saying that, like, he was just trying to root out corruption in Ukraine. Mm. This was all about Ukrainian corruption. And, like, you know, he just really wanted to get to the bottom. He was really just trying to help them out with all their corruption.
Of course.
Parnas was like, it was never once about corruption ever.
It was always about Burisma specifically. And that was always about Biden.
Yeah. That's what he said. It was strictly about Burisma, which included Hunter Biden and Joe Biden. It was never about corruption.
Yeah.
So, there we go.
Everything he'd be a great witness. Yeah. Everything you knew to be true is true.
That's right.
Once again, common sense vindicates common sense.
Yeah.
As with all things Trump, you always know what's going on because you feel it in your heart.
That's right.
Yeah. Meanwhile, if things weren't hilarious enough Donald Trump knows how to make a splashy announcement. I will give that to him.
Sure.
And he made a couple of them this week.
Yeah.
One of which was that he appointed his legal team for the Senate impeachment trial. And on that team.
They're all people he's seen and loved on television.
That's right. On that team is Ken Starr and Alan Dershowitz.
Come on.
So
come on.
Here's the thing. Because I never saw a world in which Ken Starr got re-involved, but I should have. I should have seen that guy. That's me. That's on me. If you're wondering what the author of the infamous Starr Report and sex-obsessed deviant Ken Starr has been up to recently.
Yeah.
And if you are too young to know what the Starr Report is, how did we meet you? So curious.
Yeah.
But also, that was the report that led to the Clinton impeachment hearings. He's been a Fox News contributor recently.
That's where Trump recently fell in love with him. Because back in the 90s,
he wasn't a fan.
Trump thought Starr was a hack.
Yeah, he literally is quoted as saying to NBC, Ken Starr's a lunatic. I really think that Ken Starr is a disaster. Because you might not be surprised to hear that Donald Trump was very offended by the witch hunt against Clinton.
Oh, yeah.
Because it modeled behavior that he himself was engaging in. So, of course, it was a little bit threatening to him. And he, I think around that time, also said, Bill Clinton had a very tough life in the last few years. I mean, what could be tougher than that? I mean, can you imagine those evenings when he's just being lambasted by this crazy Ken Starr who's a total wacko? There's the guy. I mean, he's totally off his rocker. So that's Ken Starr.
He got that one right, didn't
Lawyer
he?
For Donald Trump.
Yeah.
But before he was a Fox News contributor, he was busy being demoted from being the president and chancellor of Baylor University and then having to resign from his tenured professor gig there because of a sexual assault scandal involved in the sports program there.
Yep.
And then before that, you might be surprised to discover, but not so surprised, that the man who elicited harsh moral judgment against Bill Clinton for his sexual activities was representing Jeffrey motherfucking Epstein.
Yeah. Yes, 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 he was.
He was Jeffrey Epstein's counsel when Epstein was under investigation in the mid-2000s for sexual misconduct with young women and girls. Mm-hmm. Epstein accepted a plea deal in 2008. He was convicted on two prostitution charges and sentenced to 13 months in jail, but he did most of that from his office on work release. And that is where Ken Starr was. Before
amazing.
That, you know, Brett Kavanaugh worked for him. Remember that?
That's right. I sure do.
During the Whitewater investigation.
Yes.
And listen, we're not going to go into Whitewater now, but you should listen to...
you must.
Watch
that podcast.
Yeah.
You know, the one, the impeachment one.
The impeachment podcast.
Oh, shit. And the Nixon impeachment podcast.
Yeah, that's right.
Just Google impeachment podcast.
It's on Slate.
We can't remember what it's called.
We talked about it endlessly.
Damn.
And now we are blanking on it totally. But you should absolutely listen to it. It's really great. Slow burn.
Oh, yeah. I was about to say I'll remember it in like 7 minutes from now. Like while we're talking about something different, we'll be talking about, you know, Joe Kennedy and all
slow burn. In any case, Whitewater was one of the more ridiculous scandals that broke in all of history. But Whitewater is how we found out that the Whitewater scandal is how they got Bill Clinton to commit perjury so that they could then impeach him for perjury for lying about sleeping with Monica Lewinsky. So the Starr report, which was supposed to be about Whitewater, was actually a detailed account of Bill Clinton's sexual...
Sexploits,
exactly. Mm-hmm. It is quite graphic.
Yeah.
It is why Monica Lewinsky is a household name. Mm-hmm. And it is also potentially besides the point when it comes to Whitewater. But Ken Starr can't help it because he's obsessed with sex.
Yeah, that's right.
He doesn't... I mean...
Clearly.
It's the theme running through his entire career.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a career that during this time, Brett Kavanaugh, future, you know, sexual deviant of the Supreme Court, is working with him.
Yeah.
He then goes on to represent Jeffrey Epstein because, of course, he then goes on to have to resign in a sexual assault scandal at a school that he's the president of.
Yeah.
To become a Fox News anchor so that Donald Trump, the sexual assaulter in chief, can hire him for his legal defense now that he's committed an impeachable offense.
I feel like this, again,
is sort
of like...
His life has come full circle in a very interesting way.
I can't remember what story I was talking about last week, but I was just sort of... Oh, was it that Ukraine airplane? I'm like, is this more... Like, who wrote the code for this?
It's like we're in the Matrix.
Like, who coded this? Because... What? Of course. Like, how...
One note that I want to say that I learned from this story about the Clinton impeachment, just related to Adam Schiff's comment that this would be the first Senate trial without witnesses if the Republicans don't bring any new witnesses. They did not actually call live witnesses at the Clinton impeachment. So they used videos of taped depositions with Monica Lewinsky, Sidney Blumenthal, and Vernon Jordan. Mm.
Interesting.
Those were the witnesses in the Clinton impeachment. Taped depositions with Sidney Blumenthal. Anyway, speaking of Alan Dershowitz, he's involved but doesn't want you to think he's too involved.
So good.
He was announced as part of the team. All this news broke about him and Ken Starr being on the legal team.
And then he immediately was like, well, I'm not a full-fledged member of the impeachment defense.
He's only a half-fledged member, so don't worry about it.
He's only an hour-long member of the impeachment team because that's what he's doing. He's apparently going to provide an hour-long constitutional defense of the president before the Senate as Trump goes to trial next week. And I think his quote is hilarious here in how much he wants to distance himself from this, because he said, I think it overstates it to say I'm a member of the Trump team. I was asked to present the constitutional argument that I would have presented had Hillary Clinton been elected and had she been impeached.
I call bullshit comment.
I do too. But like, I mean.
Yeah, he's like, I would even do this for Hillary Clinton.
I know. Like, he wants as far away from this as possible.
Yeah. Wants nothing to do with this.
Yeah.
And listen, hilarious. I get it, but if that is your feeling,
but don't give the hour.
That's right. You don't even need to be a half-fledged member of this defense team. You could be a non-fledged member of it.
That's right.
You could be fully unfledged.
Yeah, but he wants to be on television also, though.
Of course. Yeah. Also, he loves Donald Trump. He's always saying nonsense, shenanigan things that are supporting Donald Trump. Yeah. So he wants to be involved because of his principles.
Or lack thereof.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, moving back to election news for a moment.
This has been one of your favorite stories of the week, and you've been talking about it, and I sort of, like, haven't really fully delved into it until I pulled the notes from this, and, Lila can vouch for the fact that as I was doing this, I was sort of like, what is happening in this Massachusetts Senate primary? I said it, like, 12 times.
Wild. I learned about this on Twitter from a random tweet. I can't even remember where it came from. I don't know what was going on. I was just reading conspiracies on Twitter, like you do, and I thought to myself, this is going to be overblown, whatever.
Right.
But what is happening is actually kind of insane. So remember, Massachusetts, unlike California, doesn't have jungle primaries. This is a regular primary between two Democrats, one of whom is the incumbent, Ed Markey, who is the sponsor of the Green New Deal in the Senate.
Right. Wrote it with AOC.
Wrote it with AOC, is in a race against Joe Kennedy III, who's a congress member from Massachusetts who believes he should be in the Senate.
Yes.
Possibly because of his last name. And he's got very splashy red hair.
Right.
And he's toyed with the idea of being...
has a splashy last name.
That's right. He's Joe Kennedy III.
Sure.
Yep. I don't know if he's thought about the fact that given the lifespan we can expect for someone with that name, it might not be smart to elect another Kennedy into an important position.
It's weird on a lot of levels, but at its sort of like most base level, it's interesting because like it sort of is like the upside down of a lot of the progressive and moderate primaries we've been seeing. Because like what has been mostly happening is that progressives have decided that they're going to challenge a moderate.
Right.
This is a moderate deciding that they're trying to challenge a progressive.
Yeah.
Now, the moderate, Joe Kennedy, is attempting to pretend like he's a progressive,
right,
which is a questionable choice at best, mostly.
Given that he's literally trying to challenge the guy who wrote the Green New Deal.
Right. But a lot of people and organizations are weighing in on this. It's like turned into like this huge sort of like bellwether as to like what side you come down on this. And it's got some strange bedfellows.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's not even a good bellwether because it's a really confusing bellwether because it seems like progressives are endorsing anyone and everyone.
Anyone and everyone.
People who have no business having anything to do with a Massachusetts primary are endorsing in the race in the first place, which is nuts.
AOC has endorsed
Ro Khanna.
Ro Khanna, who's, on the Sanders presidential team, endorsed.
The Sunrise. Markey,
and Sunrise Movement, because of the Green New Deal, obviously, has endorsed him. So, like, he has, like, real progressive cred. I mean, he's been in favor of single-payer healthcare since, like, 2009.
Yeah.
He has a co-sponsor of the Sanders single-payer bill that's been in the Senate. So, like, he has credibility. He sort of is like an old, boring person.
Yeah.
So, like, I think that's where Joe Kennedy is probably thinking that he can maybe make this happen for himself here. But, like, this week, some other members of the Congressional Progressive Caucus weighed in and endorsed Kennedy. And Kennedy is a member of that caucus, but, like, probably shouldn't be. But
yeah. Also, probably shouldn't be. And also, we're still talking about endorsing him in a race against an incumbent member of the Senate.
Right.
So we're talking about, it's not like they're endorsing him in a race against Joe Smith, a farmer from fucking, Springfield, Massachusetts. There are not farmers in Springfield, Massachusetts. I don't know what I'm saying. But, like, a gambler from Springfield, Massachusetts.
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking about somebody who is a sitting member of the Senate in that seat right now. We're talking about them endorsing him against an incumbent.
Yeah.
In a race, in a state that has elected Republicans to the Senate before. So this is like a weird thing for anyone to be doing anyway.
Yeah.
But the co-chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus, Mark Pocan, endorsed him.
Yep.
And like...
Along with
Raul Grijalva.
And both of those two have
Bernie
endorsed
supporters.
Bernie. They're Bernie supporters because Pocan endorsed Sanders this week.
Yeah. It's wild.
And 16 other House Democrats also endorsed Kennedy this week.
And I want to pick apart Pocan's statement about this because I have some thoughts.
We have thoughts.
As a proud progressive voice in Washington, Joe has been a tireless champion for social and economic justice. From fighting for mental health parity to protecting the rights of transgender Americans and advocating for a more inclusive economy, Joe offers the moral clarity and energized leadership that our country and party need today more than ever before.
Yeah.
Couple points.
Right.
Those are, first of all, some incredibly specific things that, like, he's fighting for the transgender community.
Sure.
Listen, everyone should be fighting for the transgender community. That doesn't make you progressive.
No.
It just makes you a decent politician.
I remember you and I were raging over a lot of the Democrats jumping into the primary this year for president because, like, and I remember specifically it was Joaquin Castro,
mm-hmm,
like, released his sort of, like, I'm a huge progressive ad at the very beginning and was talking about, like, how on day one he would get back into the Paris Climate Accord.
Right.
As if, like, that was, yes, that is a good idea, but you should literally not have a D next to your name if you don't think that.
Exactly.
You know? And the same with this entire list.
Yes.
Economic justice.
This is just a list of things,
like,
Democrats stand for.
Go be a Republican if you don't stand for this. And I'm not saying that to, like, be bombastic. I'm saying that because, like, that's actually real. I'm assuming that these are all things that are on our platform.
They should be. They are at least implicitly on our platform.
Right.
But the idea also that somehow makes him a better person than the person currently in office
who
wrote the Green New Deal. Like, he is not a leading voice on anything, no. Joe Kennedy. He's just a guy who's in Congress.
Right. He's a younger guy.
With and the, then the, Raul the, Grijalva.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. This is not good.
Focused on Kennedy's ability to, quote, build coalitions and unite his colleagues behind progressive causes.
Right.
Listen. If you are using the term build coalitions.
Is code for.
Sellout.
You're right. Going against your morals.
That's right.
Or I don't know what his morals are, but I mean, yeah, it's like.
Yeah, maybe his morals are.
Folding.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is code in political speak. It's I know that in theory, building coalitions is a great idea.
Ooh, yeah.
You know who's built some coalitions? Ed Markey.
Oh, right.
Who wrote the Green New Deal.
Right.
That's a pretty big coalition of people that he's built.
Yeah.
And it is also, it's interesting to me because Joe Kennedy is not, like, it's, you know, they talk in the story about their voting records and they say that, you know, there's a site called Progressive Punch that rates, you know, members of Congress on their progressiveness. Oh, yeah. And, you know, Joe Kennedy gets 97% and Ed Markey gets 99%. But that 2% is literally the entire progressive platform. And also, right. If you, like, anything that actually comes to a vote is, like, something everyone agrees on. Right. They have already whipped votes for these things. Most of the votes that they take are meaningless votes for boring nonsense things.
Right.
That 2% is the things that are so progressive that the moderates won't vote for them.
Right.
And then
they're only the things that you're getting to vote on. So, like, what does Joe Kennedy stand for?
Right, what is he leading
on? We haven't passed yet. You know what I mean? Like, what is his sort of, like, big progressive vision for the country? Like,
what idea is he bringing to the table?
Right.
Because Ed Markey has brought a very specific progressive idea to the table and built a coalition around it.
Right.
In any case, it's not that I'm surprised that people are endorsing in this race. I'm surprised by the sheer number of people that have endorsed and where they're from and why.
Right.
Why has John Lewis endorsed in this race?
Right, I know.
Like, what is anyone doing?
I know.
Go home.
I know, but, like, NARAL Pro-Choice has endorsed Markey. So have some unions have endorsed Markey. But some, you know, like, Move On hasn't yet. Democracy for America hasn't. Our Revolution hasn't. Justice Democrats also haven't yet either, but I'm curious to see how long that lasts because Waleed Shaheed, who's a spokesperson for them, said this week, if the head of the Progressive Caucus is going to weigh in on primaries, our hope is that he would do it on the side of progressive champions. So it's sort of like, if it seems like they're obviously, like, on Team Markey there. They just haven't officially endorsed anything.
And the other second point to make when we're talking about who meets the progressive threshold, Markey obviously leading on the Green New Deal. So even if Joe Kennedy is vaguely a supporter of it, that's not the same thing as being the guy.
Yeah.
But also, Kennedy just recently decided he's for Medicare for All.
Yes. And that is the thing that sort of I think people are most upset about here if you're on the left, because, like, that has rankled the left about Joe Kennedy for quite a while, because he literally, it was like in 2019.
Yeah.
And my guess is that he probably just vaguely said that he was for Medicare for All, but, like, secretly means that he's for Medicare for All Who Want It or some, like,
he did it so he could run
like
in
that.
This race.
Right.
Because he knows that you have to be in favor of Medicare for All because people like it.
Yeah.
But yeah, that, so he doesn't even, that 2% is the entire thing.
Yeah, right.
All of the Democrats score like a 95% on the rankings for being like the top,
except the ones who don't, and they're being primary by progressives.
Exactly. Like, this is not like, are all of them except Dan Lipinski pro-choice? Yes. So of course they're all voting on legislation that supports a woman's right to choose. Like, there's not enough of a variation in that of the stuff they get to vote on that there's a distinction to be made.
Yeah.
The 2% is the whole thing. It's the whole game.
Yep.
In any case, it's so weird though that everyone's obsessed with this race.
Right.
It's weird that everyone is like, we have a senator who's doing impressive things, let's primary him with a random other guy who wants to be famous in Massachusetts also. Like, I know that people have seen, like, an exciting future for Joe Kennedy.
Sure.
But I also sort of am like,
people thought that he might run for president.
Right. Like,
he was a person who had to announce that he wasn't running for president this year, I think.
But that doesn't mean he gets to take the Senate seat.
No.
I mean,
it doesn't.
He can try,
I'm curious
guess.
If Warren is going to have to weigh in on this at
I mean,
some point.
It is so exhausting.
She's going to get asked, I'm sure.
Yeah, but, obviously. But it's exhausting. Who has time for this?
I know.
Also, do people not like Ed Markey as a person or something? Like,
is
he mean?
He doesn't seem like he could be. I mean,
yeah,
boring, potentially.
Boring, for sure. But mean? I don't, like, it's like, you know, there are certain offices, progressive offices often have this problem where they are, as an outward observer, you're like, oh, they're getting stuff done. They're doing stuff, whatever. And then when you talk to people on the Hill, they're like, oh, I hate dealing with Sanders staff. Because, like, obviously Sanders staff does not really play by the same rules as everyone else because they don't have a party and they're just sort of, like, up to shenanigans.
Yeah.
And so everyone hates dealing with them because they're up to
shenanigans. Doesn't seem like that would be Markey.
No, but that's what I'm saying. Like, yeah. I see that was the case with Gillibrand. It's the case with, you know, the people are very decorum obsessed in the Senate. So anyone who even does anything that isn't incredibly ineffective is ripe to be, you know, having people say that they're not following the rules and they're not doing the things the way they're supposed to. But Ed Markey seems like exactly the guy who follows all the rules, shows up at your dinner party on time, ready to discuss the topic, prepared to discuss whatever topic comes up.
Right.
Doesn't want to make a fuss about it.
Has a staff that will, you know, politely take your phone calls.
That's right. And... like, what could be going on there?
Right.
Yeah. Is he like axe murdering children in the basement? Like, what?
I don't know. No.
Why is everyone being so weird? Anyway.
Yeah, it's weird.
That's a side note. In other final news.
Yeah. This is exciting.
Something exciting and or depressing happened.
Right, but I mean, you know what? I think exciting anyway. And I think what is exciting about it is, you know, the Virginia House or state legislature this week passed the Equal Rights Amendment.
Yeah.
And what I think is exciting about this, even if this goes nowhere, which is hopefully not going to be the case, it's going to end up in the courts. We'll tell you why in a second.
Yeah.
But, like, this is why we need to continue to win state legislatures. Because, and I think that, like, our big push in Virginia and, like, the huge, like, swath of women that were elected this time, you know, they have women in leadership posts. They have their first Speaker of the House there who was a woman. They have a record number, I think, in both the...
Both chambers, right?
In both chambers. So, like, this is what you get when you do that, you know? And, like, so... This is important in that respect. So what happened was the ERA was passed in Congress in 1972, and it set a ratification deadline of 1979. That was later extended to 1982, where to pass, and basically what it does is it sort of like, you know, it gives equality of rights under the law
regardless
of sex. Yeah, so that's what we're talking about here. So they had... It had to be ratified by 3/4 of state legislatures. So by 1977, Indiana became the 35th state to ratify the amendment. And then after that, it just went cold.
You need 38, by the way.
You need 38, yes. So they had 35 in 1977. They extended it to 1982, hoping that they were going to get some more, and then they didn't. So it reappeared recently as a new push. Because there's some weird wording in the actual amendment as it's written itself.
Well, it's the preamble to it is what declares the deadline. It's not in the body
of
the amendment.
It's not in the actual
amendment. So no one's really... People are trying to argue that that doesn't apply.
Right. So there's been like a recent push to sort of like get to 38 because then you can at least sort of like make the case that it should be ratified.
Right.
So in 2017, Nevada ratified it, making it 36.
Right.
And then in 2018, Illinois made 37. And so now we're at 38, which is the threshold.
Right.
So it was a huge excitement. Like, if you look at the pictures from them passing that, I mean, it really sort of, like, shows the power of, like, what passing this means, especially to all of the women who were in there taking this vote.
Right. Yeah, to keep in mind, like, we're literally talking about just having something in our Constitution that says that men and women are equal. We're not talking about something that says, like, men will be murdered at noon on a Sunday.
Right.
Like, literally just men and women are equal.
Right. But if you're Alabama or who are the other two states again? There's, like, three states are basically, like, taking this to the courts.
Of course. Because
Alabama, Louisiana, and South Dakota filed a lawsuit last month seeking to block the archivist of the United States from adding the Equal Rights Amendment to the Constitution.
That's right.
So basically what's going to happen is that because of what you said, that the date cutoff is only in the preamble, there are supporters of this bill. And the reason that the supporters sort of like have been out there trying to get states to pass this is because they feel like they could make a case in court that they have now done it. And that 1982 deadline actually didn't really mean anything because like, it's now been ratified, so who cares whether it got ratified in 1982
or now. Why would there be a deadline on this anyway?
Right.
If 38 states ratify it, then we did it.
Yeah.
It's done.
Well, and that's what the supporters of it think.
Yeah. I don't know why you would set a deadline on ratifying an amendment to the Constitution that's forever.
And I also don't know why Alabama would give a shit whether women are treated equally or not.
I know why.
I can
guess why.
But I mean, like, you know, that doesn't mean that they still can't make their own draconian laws about, like, women's bodies. Shouldn't, but, you know, it's just sort of like, to take this to court to, like, not be allowed to be in the Constitution seems like such a real, like,
dick
move.
Well, I was gonna say, we already have, like, equal protection under the law as a constitutional, you know, concept. So it's not, like, this is just to clarify a thing that theoretically should exist already. Yeah. So, like, why be so offended by it?
I know.
Obviously, they're still going to be up to shenanigans over there. They're going to define equality. Remember when we defined equality as separate but equal?
Yep.
They're going to do that shit for women. We have to get through a whole second stage. We haven't even started the first stage.
Yep. But this is why you keep voting for in your local offices.
That's right.
Because you know what?
It matters.
Once we get to 50 states who have ratified it, then it's going to be hard to say that we shouldn't put it in the Constitution.
That's right.
Now, you know, Alabama will probably be the 50th, and it might be 100 years from now.
Right.
But, you know, I mean, like, this is sort of like a good example of, like, why you fight.
Yeah. Alabama has a Democratic senator right now because people got together and voted for a Democratic senator. Anything could happen.
Right.
You don't know what's going to happen.
Right. Because of how he was treating women, the way.
Exactly.
Or girls.
Alabama.
More specifically.
It's interesting that a state government where literally everyone was brought down by a blackface scandal last year is the 38th state to ratify this new amendment having to do with equal rights. But, you know, you live in the world you live in. You can't help that.
So,
but in any case, it's exciting.
Yeah.
And could potentially even be more exciting if it actually happens.
Yeah. It felt like very moving to sort of like read about it and read the quotes and look at the pictures and everything. I mean,
and
it was
just
sort of like
2020. So it feels like maybe we could just have the Equal Rights Amendment.
Yeah.
It seems like it shouldn't be that controversial.
Agreed.
Alabama, man. What are you going to do? In any case, that's the news this week. We'll be back next week with thoughts on how the Senate impeachment trial is going.
That's right. And then we go to Iowa.
Then we go to Iowa.
The weekend after that.
That's right.
Iowa.
So stay tuned.
Mm-hmm.
Everything's happening then. Everything is happening. We'll talk to you next week. Bye.